We were there last year, and I was there before also.
Oh.
It's an interesting place, isn't it? But there are...
The big, big professors, but they say that there is no life after death.
Yes, they have no religion. On the whole, they have no
religion. No, apart from religion, this is science. When you speak that there is soul, and the soul transmigrates from one body to another, it has nothing to do with religion. It is a fact. It is a science. The people do not know it.
Yes, and it is so true. Last year when we were in Russia, we went to many monasteries. And the monasteries are attended by a large number of people.
Mm.
When I was there before, in 1956, there were one church, 13 people went into the church on a Sunday. But now the churches are full, not all of them, many are closed. But they have opened some of the churches again. And in the monasteries, both outside Moscow, Zagorsk, and outside Leningrad, there were monasteries are of enormous size. There's in the monastery ground, vast estate. There's a cathedral, Nevsky Prospect, and Alexander Nevsky Monastery, at the end of the Nevsky Prospect. And there you have a very large cathedral and 12 churches in the grounds, and four places where people, famous people and unfamous people, people who are not all that famous, musicians and philosophers and so on, they have been buried there in the time of the Tsars. And it's very interesting to see that. Now, we went into the monasteries and we find in the monasteries mostly old people, of course, and they do the chanting of their prayers, unlike the chanting that you hear in England from the old priests, who have louder voices, very melodious and everything else, but the voices are loud. But in both in outside Moscow, in Zagorsk, which is 40 miles outside Moscow, and in the other monasteries we visited, the voices are very soft and gentle. And they're speaking with so much feeling as they sing this song, in a voice that you can hardly hear, but you know that they're speaking these things, and they're saying their prayers. And you notice that the tears are on their cheeks.
Well,
bring back the memory of the past, and how times have changed, and what their fathers have taught them, and their mothers have taught them, and they've grown up and they've got old themselves, because since the revolution is 1917, what they called the October Revolution, which was in November actually, because the dates were different in those days, 13 days out. And it's 56 years. And we were very deeply moved, you know, when we heard these people out, the Zagorsk especially, there were tears coming in our eyes all as we watched them and saying their prayers, because they have their faith.
Feelings.
They have their feelings and they have their faith. They believe in religion, they believe in God.
Yes, but they are being suppressed by the government.
Well, at the moment, this time, because when I was there before, I got the feeling that they did not like religion. The authorities would not allow people to go to churches except the very old ones. They said they can go there. But now many churches have been opened. We've been to some churches inside Leningrad.
When you went there?
Last year.
Last year?
Yes.
So they have changed their policy.
Yes, the thing has changed, because the previous time I went to Russia, I was invited to go to China. And I had to speak about at the centenary of George Bernard Shaw's birth. I knew George Bernard Shaw. And I went to Peking and I traveled in various parts of China. And then I broke the journey in Siberia and went to Moscow. And I found that in Russia, there was a difference from the feeling in China. The Chinese authorities have a very great interest in and affection for and desire to help the peasants. But you don't have that in Russia. The peasants do their work and they are detached from the authorities, but in China they're not. They're much closer to the authorities. And then I also found in Russia at that time, 1956, there were people who were living in six families in one room at that time.
Six families?
In some cases, yes, six, others are three families in one room. But now, last year when we were there, we found that they've built a lot of new buildings.
In Russia?
In Russia, yes, in Moscow and in Leningrad and in all the big cities. Mm. Very, very fine buildings. And they, if there is a family of father and mother and a daughter or a son, they would have one room, and if the daughter is married, they would have two rooms, and they would have a little kitchen. And they give them, I said to them, now, what do you pay for this room? What is the rent? Mm. They worked it out in rubles. It works out as 7 and 6 pence per week. And I said, well, what about the rates? They said, what are rates? I said, don't you pay rates? They said, no. What about heating? They don't pay for heating. It's there. It's given the supply. But we were noticing that they...
And what's your telephone?
And telephone. They have telephone supplied free. Huh. And any telephone call inside the town is not charged for. Mm. Outside the town, you've got to pay.
Mm. Very good facilities. Mm.
But in Russia today, the people are beginning now to want a religion. After the revolution, the only religion was to establish the new regime and not to think about anything spiritual.
Yeah.
But now that the regime is a created thing, and they have their plans for their economic
development
and domestic development, the younger people are again turning to things that are more spiritual. Mm. They are very interested, of course, in the arts. And perhaps they have their outlet for something beyond what the regime gives them by participating in these arts and enjoying them. But there is a general returning, or a gradual returning, to more spiritual things. Mm.
This is natural, because we are spiritual identity. Mm. We are spiritual beings. So, without spiritual food, we cannot live. That is not possible.
True. But you see, they're doing other things there. It's interesting to go, as we did, to Russia last year. We noticed changes have been taking place. Mm. We went to an opera, a ballet. And at the ballet, it was a modern ballet, and there were some girls, two Russian girls, sitting alongside a South American woman. She was there by chance. And she heard us talking English, and so she addressed my wife and said, these two girls near me talk English, and I would like to talk to you. They were Russian girls, aged 14, two girls in the school, together. And they spoke English extremely well, with hardly any accent, would you agree?
Yes, very well.
Very, very well indeed. Mm. So, my wife said, where did you learn English? They said, we are taught English in all our schools now.
They have to learn English.
They have to learn English.
Okay.
You see, that's why Brezhnev goes to America, because he now relies on the West. Especially one of the big countries of the West, like America.
They can no longer support themselves. They cannot support themselves with agriculture and the commodities that the Western world and even Russia now comes to expect. They just they cannot supply these things.
Mm.
And so now they find that they must depend on the Western world and to work with the Western world, otherwise they are not going to have the standard of living which they wish to attain. So now there must be some kind of integration.
Mm. You see, they have a very big future. It will take time. Mm. They have a big future because the land is an expanse of 7,000 miles. If you take the measure from here to New York, it's 3,000 miles across water. Across America is 3,000 miles to Los Angeles. That makes 6,000 miles from here. And you've done those 6,000 miles, there's still another
Atlantic, only 3,000 miles, Atlantic?
3,000 miles. From here to America, to New York. From here to New York, from London to New York, is 3,000 miles. And from New York to California,
another 3,000.
Is 3,000 miles. That's 6,000 miles. But you measure those 6,000 miles, 3,000 of which is, doesn't belong to anybody, is the Atlantic.
Yes.
You still have 1,000 miles of Russian land. 7,000 miles of land Russia has got.
Yes.
But they haven't developed a lot of it yet.
Because the climate doesn't allow. For many, many months, the whole of the country is under ice. And the change is very dramatic and very swift, because they can go from winter, the depths of winter, to within a matter of days into the very heat of summer. And therefore their crops haven't the opportunity to germinate. And when they eventually get some growth, the heat becomes so intense that the sun burns them. And so they must go to other...
Then what is the use of such land? If you cannot grow anything.
Well, they do to some extent. But they have droughts. That's why they've lost a lot of corn.
That means chance. It is chance.
It is chance, yes.
Also,
it cannot be a planned agricultural policy.
Then what is the use of such land?
But they will develop, because they're trying all sorts of things. You see, in Tashkent and Samarkand and places like that, there are earthquakes. And the houses fall down and people get killed. But now I see that they have arranged a symmetrical, these measurement thing for the...
Symmetric? Measurement?
Seismograph.
Yes.
They are building these things under the houses, so that the signal will come a few hours before the earthquake comes. And then they arranging for the people to leave these houses.
After all, they have to struggle against nature's onslaught.
All the time.
Jisa gunamai mama maya duratvaya. So that is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. The nature onslaught is very, very strong. And we have to struggle against those onslaughts.
Right.
This is the position of material life. Daivi jesa gunamai mamo maya duratvaya. This is very, very difficult. So, mami vaja prapadante mayami tang tarantite. It can be counteracted only by developing God consciousness. Otherwise, it is not possible. The chance can be changed if God desires. If God desires, the desert can become a fertile land. A fertile land can become desert. That is happening by nature's own way. So, people have no knowledge now about God consciousness. They have forgotten. They have got little sentiment. But there is a science. It is a science. Chet vijnanam samannitam. Find out that verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave. Find out this verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave.
Oh,
this is Bhagavad Gita as it is?
Yes.
You can come here. Sit down here. Yes. Find out this verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave.
Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshyami sheshataha yaj jnatva neha bhuyon yaj jnatavyama vashishyate. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and nominal, by knowing which there shall remain nothing further to be known.
What is the purpose?
Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the spirit behind it. The source of both of them is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by a devotee of the Lord, directly from the Lord in disciplic succession. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes, and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practices. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. The Vedas say, Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavanti.
Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavanti. Simply by knowing the Supreme, everything is known. Everything becomes known. Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavanti. What is the next verse?
Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mamveti tatataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth.
So
you've done a wonderful work through the translation of these things to the extent that you've done it, 1,000 pages of it.
Yeah.
And I have been reading this in the last few days, but I got the book on Monday, so I have not had time to read as many much as I wanted, but I shall. I'll read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you've got the translations there,
yeah.
Word for word translation. And
yeah.
You
transliteration also. Mm. You can chant the verse also by Roman transliteration. So our proposition is, the sufferings of the people, all kinds of sufferings, there are three kinds of sufferings, material, miseries, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidoivik. Adhyatmik means concerning the body and the mind, there are sufferings. Everyone has experience. Concerning the body and mind, there are sufferings. And there are sufferings imposed by other living entity. This is called adhibhautik. And suffering imposed by the natural phenomena. Just like you say, earthquake, the covering by snow. So people have no hand in checking these things. There are three kinds of miserable condition. And we are spirit soul. We are struggling how to be happy without these sufferings. This is struggle for existence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Is that all right?
Sounds very good to me. I think
yeah.
It is so.
Yeah. So these sufferings, you can adjust some sufferings by material adjustment, but it is not possible to get out of the sufferings completely in material existence. That is not possible. That in Bhagavad Gita says, at least this janmamittu jarabhyati dukkha dosanadasa. You can adjust by so-called education, so-called scientific method, adjust these three kinds of miserable condition, but ultimately you have to submit to the four principles of suffering, namely birth, death, old age and disease. That we have to submit. So the modern scientists, modern philosophers, what is called altruists, philanthropists, politicians, writers, thinkers, they are all trying to mitigate the suffering. But they have set aside the four principal sufferings, birth, death, old age and disease. Nobody has proposed that we can give you relief from birth, death, old age and disease. Is there any such thing? That we can get out of all these sufferings by spiritual emancipation. That is possible. So our this Krishna consciousness movement is to give relief to the people from these sufferings. Now how it is done, how it is possible to do, that is a detail. Matter, but our Krishna consciousness movement is meant for this purpose, to give relief from all sufferings. And that is possible to get utilizing this human form of life. In other form of life, cats and dogs, animals, there is no possibility. So, the human form of life is specially meant for getting out of all these sufferings, provided he takes education, acts accordingly. Then, after giving up this body, he does not accept anymore material body which is subjected to all these sufferings. He remains in a spiritual body and enters into the spiritual world and live eternally, blissfully. This is our proposal. What do you think?
I think it's very comforting the way you placed it. I think it is.
This is possible. So every enlightened gentleman, thoughtful man, they should study this philosophy and science and scrutinizingly understand it. Just like you are an author, you can contribute to the people such knowledge, and it will be tremendous benefit for them. Otherwise, if we produce some fiction, it may give for some moment some so-called pleasure, but actually a literature should be presented in which people can get relief from the sufferings of this material existence. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tadvāga viśargat janatāga viplava jasmin prati śrukum avadda vaktapi nāmāni nantasaya jasaṁ kitāni jat ginnanti sinnanti gāyanti sādhava. Transcendental literature, giving spiritual light, even it is not very correctly written from literary point of view, still such literature is adored by sadhava, sadhu, saintly person, God-conscious person. They hear such literature, sinnanti, gayanti, they chant and they accept. It has nothing to do with the literary beauty. It may be written in broken language, it doesn't matter. And just contrary to this, there is another verse. What is that? Napat bachas chitra padang harer jasa praginita karhichi tad vayasam tirtham usanti manasa tad vayasam tirtham usanti manasa. You can find out this verse. Yes. Natad bachas chitra padang harer jasa. You can get here. It is in the first canto, third chapter, I think.
But there are so many millions of people who have no homes, no food, and they're visited by sickness and hunger, and they have no hope, they feel they have no hope to live out their lives in any kind of human comfort. And how are these people to spiritually think themselves out of their physical misery?
So let them come to us, we shall give them food, shelter, everything.
But people in poor Indian people in South America.
Now call them, all those, you are referring some class of men, let all of them come to us, we shall have, provide them.
With that spiritual
security. Both material and spiritual. We shall supply them material, food, clothing, shelter, everything, and give them spiritual enlightenment. Call them.
So you must spread yourself across the
yes,
world.
Yes, we are spreading.
You're doing it.
They're doing that. We are calling, come everyone. We have no such problem. This house, George Harrison has given us such a big house. We are living comfortably, we are also eating, we are also sleeping. We have no concern, we have no problem. It is practical, you can see, you can stay with us and see that we have no such problem.
But it is for a minority, not for a majority.
But let the majority come to us. Why do they not come?
It'll take time.
When we invite them, come here, no, they will not come.
But you haven't loaves and fishes, you cannot at this time.
But we cannot supply fishes. Yes. That is not possible.
So you can teach them and you can help them to have spiritual comfort when their stomachs are empty.
But stomach, I shall give food. Is not this?
You will give food.
Yes.
That is part of it.
Yes.
We are giving food.
Yes.
Do you think that rice, dal, and then loaves, then sweetmeats, sweet rice, fruits, so many things we are supplying. They are not food. We have to go by their dictation that you must supply them meat, fish, eggs, and wine. And no, that we cannot do.
But the basic necessities and the goodness of food you can offer them.
Yes. We can supply nice food, healthy food. You see, they are eating, these boys, they have given up. They don't smoke, they don't take tea, they don't take coffee even. Simple food on vegetable, grains, milk, fruits, they are keeping their health very nicely.
And do they divorce themselves from all physical labor?
Huh?
Do they take themselves away from all physical labor? Because if they had the opportunity to make and to cultivate for themselves,
we do that. We do that. Yes, we cultivate our own food.
Yes.
Yes. We have got. Yes. Hare Krishna. We have got a place. Giving the pan. We have got a place in New Virginia.
New Virginia?
Yes. We are producing our food. Actually, we have created this uncomfortable situation. Human being, anywhere, any part of the world, if they have got land and the animal, cows, all economic questions can be solved. Now, here there is so much land vacant, they are not utilized for producing food, they are keeping cows for slaughter. This is their business. They are utilizing land for keeping some cows for being slaughtered. So, if you go on committing sinful life, how you can be happy? Now, in the Christian Bible, it is clearly said, thou shalt not kill. Why they are killing? Why they are killing? Who is Christian? It is very difficult to find out a Christian. So people have become godless, faithless, they must suffer. This is nature's way. Devi jisa gunamai mamma adhrita. Even you want to help him, he cannot be happy. Suppose a diseased man, he is suffering from dysentery. So if you think, oh, let me supply him food, so he cannot digest food. So one who is condemned to suffer, you cannot give him any relief. You cannot give him any relief. This is futile attempt. And nature's way is, as soon as people will become demonic, godless, they should be put in different kinds of misery. Already there is miserable condition. And when they become more and more sinful, they are put into more and more miserable condition. How you can help them? Now here, we are asking everybody that come here, take your shelter, take your food, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But who is coming? Many men come here after one day, 2 days, where? Because they cannot get tea, they cannot get cigarette, they cannot get meat, flyer.
Some people are born physically, but they are not born spiritually ever.
They let them learn how to live spiritually. Therefore this Krishna consciousness movement is there. Why are you opening so many centers? We are inviting. Come on, live with us, learn what is spiritual life. So how we can help them? We can give shelter immediately in this house, at least 200 men. Let them come, live with us. But they will not come. As soon as they will hear, there is no tea, there is no coffee, there is no cigarette, there is no meat, there is no illicit sex, immediately go ahead. Yes, otherwise we can invite, come on. We are depending, we are not anxious. We are depending on Krishna. We are living here, at least 50 men. We do not know what to eat next day. We do not know. We have no such provision. But we are not dying out of starvation. We are eating, we are sleeping. We are having our kirtan, our worship, study of this literature, everything. So we have to believe. Tesham satat yuktanam. What is that? Tesham nityavi yuktanam yoga chimam bahami om. Find out. Tesham nityavi yuktanam. You are coming from Calcutta? Bengali?
No.
Mr. Asan, Mota's
son told
you
about us.
Oh, you are Mota's son?
Yes.
Oh, very good. You are there. Where you have come? When you have come here?
Three days back.
Where you are staying?
In a hotel.
In a hotel? You can come here, your father told me.
No, it's too far from the city.
Your father came to me. So I told him that we have got sufficient place. Both your son and daughter-in-law may come and live with us. So I am very glad to see you. Read that.
Ananyaschintayanto mam ye janakparyupasate tesham nityabhi yuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have.
He takes response. He takes responsibility. He says, and this is practical. We are simply concerned with Krishna consciousness. So, we have no anxiety. What to get, food, how to live, Krishna gives us. That's why He has given us this place. We've never attempted, neither we have money to purchase such a big property. But Krishna has given us. Simply everywhere, hundreds, 200, 500 men living in our center, and we have no concern.
You are pouring your faith into Krishna.
That's it.
And Krishna is giving you
everything.
What you have to have.
Actually, He is giving everyone, even one has no faith. Just like government, anyone, a citizen who has no faith in the government, has committed criminal activities, he is also supplied food by the government. Is it not? In the prison house. So Krishna, God is supplying food to everyone. That is already arranged. He is supplying food to the elephant, He is supplying food to the ant. The elephant requires so much food at a time. But there are thousands and millions of elephants in African jungle. Who is supplying food there? They are not dying of starvation. Have you seen any bird and beast has died out of starvation?
No.
So there are 8,400,000 species of different forms of life. Human life, human form of life is very, very small quantity, only 400,000. So there are 8,400,000 different forms of life. If God can supply 8,000,000 forms of life with their food, He cannot supply food to these 400,000. Why you are so much anxious about your food? This is wrong conception.
I ask not because I'm anxious, but I ask to hear what you have to say.
Yes, that I have to say that we have got full faith in God and He supplies everything. He supplies to the non-devotees. Why not to the devotees who has dedicated the life for God? That is the Vedic information. Nitya nityanam chetanas chetananam eko jo bahunam vidadati kaman. This is description.
Do you understand?
This is Sanskrit. This is Sanskrit, yes. So I will explain that God means He is also a person like you and me. So He is one person and we are many living in it. Nitya Nityana. He is the chief. He is the chief person, supreme person. We are all persons, and He is the chief person. Now, what is the difference between the supreme person and this many person? The difference is the ego bahunam jo vidadhati kama. That one is supplying all the necessities of this pluralism. So they are being maintained. And He is maintainer. That is the difference.
He is the divine creator of everything.
Yes. Just like father. Father might have 10 children. So He is giving food to all the children. So He is the supreme father. We are all children. Why He shall not give? Even good son or bad son, the father is equal. But if we become good, that means if we become obedient to the Father, that is success of life. So our endeavor should be how to become faithful to God. We haven't got to ask Him for our food. He is supplying and He will supply. Our business is how to become faithful to God. That is our business. Because we being not being faithful, we are put into this material world. And as soon as we become faithful, we get relief from this material existence. takta deham punarjanma mamitu kantiya. Find out this. Janma karma midibbam yujanati tattva. Everything is explained there.
If you value something that is gold and you want it and you don't have it, then you are unhappy. But if the gold is of no value to you, you don't want it and you are happy without it.
No, God is good. We do not know what is good. God is good.
Gold.
No, I say
gold.
Yes. Someone says, I will not be happy unless I have this thing. And this thing is not attainable, so they are not happy without it. But if they can teach themselves that the material thing is valuable,
that we are teaching,
then they are happy without
it. Yes, that we are teaching, that you do not know what is that goal that will make you happy.
Yes.
That we are presenting. That verse was that, jasmin vijñāte sarvamidam vijñātam bhavanti. If you make your goal God, and then you will be happy. That is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nati vidu sārtha gatim hi Vishnu. They do not know what is the goal of life. The goal of life is to attain favor of Vishnu. Durāsayāji bahirathamānina. They are trying to be happy by material adjustment. And people are being misled. Andhājathāndhīrupaniyamāna. And misleaders, so-called politicians, philosophers, and they are misleading, that you do this, you will be happy. You do this, they do not know. Even these so-called teachers and philosophers, they do not know what is the goal of life. And they are giving misdirection to these people. Andhājathāndhīrupaniyamāna. Just like a blind man is trying to lead other blind men. How he can help? He does not know himself. What is the goal of life? There is a defect. Some blind man, they are trying to lead other blind men. Therefore you find in Russia, sometimes revolution, again they are coming to their original position. This is going on. Andhājathān dhīrupaniyamāna. A blind man, come on this side, and this coming, this wrong. No, it is not. Come this side. This is going on. But they do not know. What is the goal of life? Now this is goal of life.
The goal of life directs the mind to the spiritual. And to God.
Yes.
And the goal of life emerges, or various branches emerge from that faith in God and from the spiritual attitude of mind and feeling. Mm. You then have to expand along the ways that God would wish, namely, to think of others, to be kind to others, to help others, and so on. Isn't that true?
No, God does not say that you kind to the others. God is sufficient himself. He does not require your help.
He doesn't?
No.
No, but we have to try and...
You are created. You have created this conception that if I don't help him, then he'll die. If you can help him, you can help him with God consciousness, awakening his God consciousness. That is real help. And if you think that I shall make him happy by material supply, it is not possible. It is not possible. Mm. It will be failure. It is failure everywhere. Mm. Just like your, not your, American people, I was talking in 1965, one sannyasi, Ramakrishna Mission. So the gentleman told me frankly that you are taking so much money from America for Daridra Narayan Seva, for feeding the poor. But when we go to India, we see all poor men lying on the street and footpath. What you have done? So this is Ramakrishna Mission with the same, to feed the poor, to make them happy. They are working for 100 years, but what they have done? What they have done? And who has done? Everyone speaks like that, big, big word, that I shall help the poor, I shall make the unhappy happy. But who has done it? Nobody can do it. If nature has put him into trouble, you have no power to amend it. Just like a person who is condemned to death by the state law, you cannot help. You cannot help. It is not possible. Can you? Similarly, if one is condemned, how you can help? If he is condemned by God, tavat tanuvritam tadupekshita na. So this is a science one has to learn. You don't waste your time by so-called philanthropic work. You cannot help. This is not possible. If you want to help any people, just be yourself, Krishna conscious, and try to help others to become Krishna conscious. That is real life. Otherwise you cannot help. It is not possible. This is the best help to the human society, to awaken their Krishna consciousness. This is the best help. Paropaka. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. He asked every Indian, Bharat bhumite manusya janma haila ja, janma sartha kori karo paropaka. This is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, that anyone who has taken birth in India, he should make his life successful first and then distribute the knowledge all over the world. That is his mission. Because this Krishna consciousness understanding is still, India is so fallen, it still there is.
What are you doing for my studies? And then after that I went back again to India. After my being educated in London, in history, I went back to India and I joined a newspaper there called The Englishman.
Englishman, yes.
And when I got there, I found that I was appointed assistant editor of The Englishman. I one of four assistant editors.
What is your age now? What is your age now?
What is my age now?
Yes.
I'm 77.
Oh. You are a junior.
No, I am also 77.
He's just a few months older than me. Yes.
My birth date is 1896.
1896?
Yes.
Well, I was think born in 1895, so I'm older than you. And I then went to Calcutta and I joined this newspaper. And I was made assistant editor. And I disagreed with the policy of that paper. Because that paper was, as in The Englishman, it was for showing how the English should rule the Indians.
Yes.
And I was against that. I said, this is the country of the Indians. It is not for us
therefore,
to restore, it is for us to restore the country to them.
Yeah, that is very nice.
And the editor did not agree with me, and I refused to write any articles.
Therefore, British Empire failed.
Hmm?
British Empire failed on this short-sighted policy. They wanted to rule all over the world
that's right.
The British people, not for the people.
I said to the editor, I'm sorry, I can't write articles that are attacking Indians. It's their country and I am on their side. So I then found that I wanted to go and do some reporting and he would not allow it. He says the Indians must do their own reporting. I said, I was born in India, what are you talking about? And anyhow, I then set out on my own, and the paper, The Englishman, was attacking a paper called the Amrita Bazaar Patrika.
Yes.
Motilal Ghosh. Ghosh, the editor.
His nephew was here came yesterday.
Really?
2 days ago, his grandson was here.
And so I wandered around. He was living somewhere, his office was somewhere in the Harrison Road, near
there. Their office was in Bagh Bazaar. Bagh Bazaar.
What do you call it?
Bagh
Bazaar.
Bagh Bazaar.
Near Sham Bazaar.
Near Sham Bazaar. And I went there and I went up.
I think you lived in Sham Bazaar, not Harrison Road.
What?
There was a stable of the tramways company.
What? But I went there where he was sitting there on the floor.
No, yes, you said, born. When you were born, yes. You said underneath there are horses. So in Sambhajar depot, in our childhood we saw, there was, the tram car was drawn by horses. So they had different stables. Mm-hmm. In the Sambhaja, there was a stable, I remember.
Yes, I see.
Yeah.
So I went down into this place. It is from Harrison Road. Is it not Harrison Road? It's such a long time ago.
Yes, Harrison Road is very long and, from Howrah Bridge.
Yes, Harrison Road.
Harrison
Road.
It is Harrison Road. Yes. It's
Harrison
Road. Yes, I know that. And I went to the place and I went upstairs. And Motilal Ghosh was sitting on the floor, as one would. And I sent my name in because I wasn't allowed in, and I gave my name and I had a card as a man who was attached to a newspaper. And it was handed to Motilal Ghosh, and Motilal Ghosh sent the card back and said he wanted to do nothing with me. So I went to the door and I greeted him like this, and I said, I have come to talk to you. And he just looked at me, and I sat on the floor with him, and we talked a great deal about all sorts of things. And he could see from the way I was interested in India and the people of India and the future of India, that the next morning he wrote a big article on the front page saying that I had been to him and we talked, and my editor was furious. Well, the editor didn't do anything to me.
And you were very young at the time.
I was very young, I was about 20. 20 years old.
Yeah.
And then I developed by taking charge of various things, but I refused to write anything against India. And the editor then had made me his chief assistant. And he came to England. And I was in charge. And two or three days after he left for England, no airlines...
Which paper? That Englishman?
Englishman.
Yeah.
I then, when he turned his back and he went away to England, Motilal Nehru.
Motilal Nehru, yes.
Father of Nehru.
No, father, yes.
Had just come out of jail. And I wrote to him. And I said, we have said a lot of things.
He had a paper also in Allahabad.
He had, but then I wanted him to write for
Independence
me.
Or something
yes,
like
that. I wanted him to write for me.
Ah.
So I wrote and said, I have now in charge of the Englishman for a few months. And we have written the English viewpoint, the paper has, but I would like for you to express the Indian viewpoint. And he wrote to me, he was living in Baliganj. Baliganj, somewhere there. I think it was Baliganj.
Maybe, yes.
Hmm? I don't know. And he wrote
to me. Baliganj, there is a place.
Yes, in Baliganj.
There is a place, yes.
Yes, he was living there, I think. And he wrote to me, it was at Alipur, Baliganj, I think it was at Baliganj. And I wrote to me to say, will I come and see him? So I went to see him and we talked quite a bit, and he agreed to write for me 6 articles from the Indian point of view in the Englishman paper, which is an Englishman's paper, anti-Indian. And the article appeared, there was no air service in those days, and when the paper arrived in England, the editor was furious, he sent a telegram, and he caught the next ship and came back to India. And he told me that I had no business to do this. I said, I was editor in your absence, and that's the way I look at things. And I realized that I would be sacked any time. But he didn't sack me. All he said was that I am stopping this series. I said, how are you going to stop it? I said, I gave him a contract to write 6, and he's only written 2 so far. He's got to do the other 4. And they carried it, they had to carry it. And so that's that. But you know, this episode of mine, I forgot completely through the years, but I met Nehru's sister, who was the...
Vijayalakshmi.
Mrs. What's her name?
Vijayalakshmi.
Vijayalakshmi Pandit.
Yes, that's right. I only met her the once. And she was, she had a high position here on behalf of Nehru. What was he?
She was ambassador.
High commissioner,
that's right. And when I was at a lunch party, and I was introduced to her with other people there, she came and sat next to me at the lunch table. And she said, I wanted to meet you. She said, I have read some of the things you've written. And she says, and I'm editing my father's book of letters. And she says, and there are references to you in the book. I couldn't understand it. And I said, why should your father write about me? So she says, because you used articles from him. And then it came back to me. all these years later. Well, that's it. And so I always campaign for the freedom of India. I have the same attitude towards the countries that belong to other people. It belongs to them and it should be theirs.
You are very liberal-minded.
Well, that's only fair, it's only real, it's only natural.
Yes.
Why should you take a country away from other people?
That is Vedic injunction. Mangrida kasati dhanam. Tena tak tena bhunjita. You should be satisfied. What is given to you by God, you should not encroach upon others' problem. That is Vedic way of life. This is very perfect life. Why should I encroach upon others' thing? I should be satisfied with my own things, what God has given to me. This is Vedic way of life. Actually, everything belongs to God. So just like everything belongs to Father, when Father gives something to his son, he should be satisfied what is given by the Father. He should not encroach upon other brother's property. This is the way of life.
You know, you say that this house was given to you by George Harrison, and this is quite interesting because the Beatles were born in very humble circumstances.
Yeah.
And they had a talent, and they used their talent. But God would make their talent earn for them, and they, with that talent and with what they earn, can give back into the pool so that it can go on.
This is the way of life.
Ah.
That is the way of life that is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How one's life can be perfect. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atapungvi dijasreshta varnasama vibhagas sanusthitasya dharmasya sangsiddhi haritosana. According to Vedic way of life, there are four divisions of the society. Eight. The Brahmana, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, you know, the Shudra and the Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. This is the regulated life of human society, Varnasa. If we want to satisfy the Supreme, if we want to reach the ultimate goal of life, we must go through this process, Varnasa. Therefore, according to Vedic principle, unless one accepts this Vedic Varnasam Dharma, he is not considered as human being, because this is the way to reach to the ultimate goal. So, this is one side. So, the discussion was going on in Naimisharana, and Śrūta Gosvāmī was the president. So, he explained that human life, it doesn't matter in which section he belongs, because any man, he must be within any one of these divisions. Brahman, Kshatri, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. It doesn't matter in which category he belongs to. But his aim should be how to satisfy the Supreme. Then his life is successful. Either he is a Brahman, or a Shudra, or a Brahmachari, or Sannyasi, it doesn't matter. But if his aim is how to satisfy the Supreme, similarly, as you have explained, these boys, the Beatles, especially this George, he is trying to satisfy Krishna. He has got a talent. By his talent, he has earned enormous money. Now he is thinking that these people are trying to spread Krishna consciousness. They are servants of Krishna. So if I can help them, Krishna will be pleased. That is success.
And of these Beatles, he is perhaps the most spiritually satisfied.
Yes, he's very good. He came yesterday. He was with me for 3 hours. He's very interested. He wants to hear. First of all, he gave me $19,000 for publishing my Krishna book.
This book says.
That book. When he first came to see me, so I asked him that you are a nice boy and that one part cost me $19,000.
So this first volume you have, this first volume.
Very fine book.
If you look at the introduction, it's written by George. The introduction is written by George.
Introduction. In the front of the volume.
Introduction in the front of the book.
The preface.
The introduction?
Yes. Preface.
Oh, I see.
The preface, then.
Oh, yes.
So we are inviting everyone to come and take some nice prasadam and leave here.
Mr. Nehri actually speaks Hindi also.
He knows Hindi?
Yes, he speaks Hindi also.
Oh, you can speak in Hindi also?
Hindustani.
Hindustani.
Yes, he is born in India.
And although I left
India... Formerly, all Europeans, they had to learn the local language. Those were officers. I was a student in Scottish Church's College. So they were mostly Scotsmen, all professors. Mm. But they used to learn Bengali. I had one my professor, Professor Scrimgeour. He was English professor. So when he was teaching us English, he was quoting parallel passages from Bankim Babu's book. You know Bankim Babu, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, famous novelist.
Say that again, would you please?
Bankim Chandra Chatterjee.
Oh, yes. His work, yes.
He was considered a Scot of Bengal. Sir Walter Scott.
I know Hindustani because I was born in Calcutta and we had people who talked Hindustani and I knew Hindustani better than my father, the constable, the child. And then when I went back to India after being in England for my studies, I found that the Hindustani was very easy to come by again. But about 3 years ago, somebody was going to do some film work in Pakistan. And he asked me if I would go and help him in there. So I said, I am not able to come. I said, I won't have time to take part in all this work with you. And he said, you know the place, you know the language, you know this. And I said, well, I don't know everything. I do know bits of Pakistan and I will not be able to come. So what he did was he bought a ticket to fly me out to India with him. And I said, well, you can't buy a ticket for me and take me. I said, I just can't come. I said, if you wait, I'll come with you for a fortnight just before Christmas. And I must be back for Christmas. So he booked the ticket and I went out. And his purpose was to do a film on Pakistan from the outset of its freedom up to that time when I was there, which was in 1968, December. And I said I would just help him with some research and that's all. But when we arrived, he got flu and he was in bed for 5 days. And he knew I was going to stay there for a fortnight. So the next day, instead of his being able to do it, I had to go out with the camera and everything else and I took the pictures for 5 days. And when he was better, he said, well, now we'll go on so and so. And I said, well, I'll go up to the north and I'll go and see all the parts this side, but I can't go to East Pakistan because I haven't got the time. I must get back to the work I'm doing. And so I spent a fortnight there. But what I was leading up to say was this, that it was years after I left India, that visit, and I was in a carrier in a car, and a man in front was told to drive us somewhere. And this man didn't speak any English at all, he only spoke Hindustani. And he was given instructions in Hindustani, and then I found that I understood every word. And this man said he wasn't going to do something or other, and I then suddenly came out with words that I had forgotten, I remembered. I said, Aap bandabast kiya, bandhavast is a contract. And he looked at me, he was so surprised, he said, gee. But then you see, I have always taken the view when I was in India, even as a child and since then, I always call the man not Tum but Aap, because he is equal to us, he is no different from us.
Yes, that is the gentleman's address, Aap.
Aap.
Tum is not good.
Tum is inferior.
Inferior, yes.
Well, you see, I have a great affection for India.
Because you are born. Janani janma bhumishta sargadavi gariyas. Yes. Anyone who is born in a land, he automatically becomes very favorite. Mother and the birthplace, they are very favorite to everyone. Janani janma bhumishta sargadavi gariyas. Better than heaven. Yes.
Have you been in India?
Yes.
You have? You too?
Also.
You learned Sanskrit there, I suppose?
Some mostly from the Guru Maharaj.
It's okay,
brother. So, kindly take prasada. Krishna prasada. Yes. You take?
I'm sorry.
Take. You also take? Abhiliji. Is that correct?
Correct.
Puri halwa.
Hmm?
Puri halwa.
Halwa. This is halwa.
Puri halwa and fruits.
Very good.
And we call this semolino.
It's halwa made out of semolina.
Very nice.
Do you find it noisy, busy?
It's very busy.
And how many days have you been here?
3 days.
So everything is very new to you. Where are you staying in London?
Mount Drive.
Yes.
In Oxford Street.
Yes.
You have seen our temple in London?
In Paris we have seen, London we have not seen yet in any place.
Mm. London city also we have, seven buried places. So how did you get this address?
From India I have this.
Oh, your father?
Yes. I wrote letters of Paris too from India.
Oh.
I must have been, I think...
Amsterdam also we have got. You have seen?
Geneva. No, we are going to Amsterdam and Geneva.
In Genoa also you have got?
No. I've been there, but we haven't got a temple.
Hmm.
actually, they have one there for a while. They closed it, now they may have reopened it, but I don't think so.
What led your, what was it, the young man who brought us here? What is he? He's not a
Ramachandra. Ramachandra.
What led him to my husband? How did he know to get in touch with my husband?
She wants to know how Jai Hari found out about them to approach them. We don't know. You have to ask him. Basically, we would say Krishna arranged it.
We must have. There must be a reason for that.
So many coincidences.
Malcolm Muggeridge is coming here, is he? Do you meet him? Malcolm Muggeridge.
Oh, well, I have heard.
My husband knows him.
And
he lives not very far away from us.
Why?
In the country.
New men do.
Of course. Are you going to stay long here, or are you just on a visit?
No, we're just on a visit.
Will you go back to Calcutta?
No, we'll go to Amsterdam, Copenhagen, and then visiting 3-4 countries, and we'll go to India.
Mm. What have you seen so far?
Paris.
You've been to Paris?
Yes. Mm. Austria, then Paris, Zurich.
Your first visits to these countries?
Yes.
What do you think of the different ways that people live? They're very different, aren't they?
Very different from India.
Mm. And very different from each other.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Do you go to America, I suppose, too?
No.
You won't go there.
Do you think that the politicians of the world don't have a sufficiently spiritual approach to life? You think that the politicians don't have a spiritual...
No, I'm not very good opinion of the politicians.
So
it may be a very strong one. Politicians, actually, this is the business of the Kshatriyas.
They are in it for personal gain, mostly.
They simply go to politics for personal gain. That's all.
Because if they all wanted good, if they all wanted the same kind of good for the same for all their people, they would not fight in different camps. They would be one people.
Right. They want personal benefit, not the benefit of the people. They say, people's government. No, it is their government.
Yes.
True.
And they must, and the people must take and accept what they decree they shall have.
That's all.
And if they want the rich people to have more money, they say to the rich people, you don't have to pay so much taxes. But to the poor people, they say you must pay more taxes.
In the Bhagavata, it is mentioned, the people will be so much embarrassed. One side, there will be no rain. Another side, there will be scarcity of foodstuff. Another side, the government will simply levy taxes. So people will become mad. They'll give up their hearth and home and go to the jungle. This time will come very soon.
Well, I think sometimes in the hippie community we see that they're going out and almost into the jungle now.
But
you go to these rock and roll festivals, it's practically like living in the jungle. They're already doing it.
But you know, in Russia, the people, the younger people, are now going back to having more spiritual thoughts and a desire to have a more spiritual life. But at the same time, it is not separate from the fact that when they see people from the Western world and from beyond the Iron Curtain coming into Russia with various worldly goods, expensive cameras, expensive clothing, they want this. So eventually, and in the not too distant future, Russia will also become capitalist state.
In many respects, it already is. In many respects, it already is that way.
Well, mentally it is. The only thing that prevents them from being a capitalist state is that the commodities are not sufficient.
But the basic thing is that the Communist Party in Russia is becoming a capitalist class.
It is. And it has been for some considerable time. Yes. Even in Stalin's time, he lived as a capitalist.
The only difference is that the complaining is not permitted. Because whenever there's a chance there's some complaint, it's immediately stifled.
Oh, but
want to complain.
But of course. This is why they were worried, very worried about Brezhnev going to America while the Watergate scandal was going on. But why they should have been embarrassed about it with Brezhnev, one wouldn't know, because Brezhnev would say, why did you give them money in our country? We would shoot them. You see, they would say we wouldn't have bribed them not to vote for us. If they didn't vote for us, we would send them to labor camps. So well, they wouldn't be embarrassed.
You see, when America was peopled by people from this country who went and settled there, and was under English rule. And a group of people there who belonged to the Puritan class, they were not Roman Catholics and they weren't Church of England, but they were Puritans. And they were interfered with by Charles I. And they got together 11 ships and went across to Massachusetts, which didn't belong to England at all.
Hmm.
And they set up their own community there in Massachusetts. And
New England.
Hmm?
New England.
New England, that's right. And while they were setting up their homes there, many other people came from England. The 11 ships didn't all get there. I think about 6 got there. The others were lost. And they set up their homes there. And they had a very strong control of the people. They did not allow the people to get away from any laws that the people at the top made. A man appointed himself governor of the country, a man called Winthrop. He was an Englishman who went from Cambridge. And the others just had to obey the laws. And for more than 100 years, if people have disobeyed the laws, they were put in prison or they were executed.
Hmm.
And they can say, and the Americans who have been to Russia, one of them is Arthur Miller. He's been to Russia 2 or 3 times. And I was waiting to see if he noticed any of the mistakes that Russia is making and the harshness that Russia is visiting on the people. And he referred to these harshnesses, and then he brought in this point that I have just mentioned. He said in Massachusetts, the people had to obey the laws or they were punished.
Yes, it was a very strict government. It was very strict.
Mm-hmm. And he said, and
the government in the old days, before independence, was very strictly enforced.
That's right.
Quite
right.
Arrangement.
And so they enforced that peace, and they enforced it for over 100 years. He says, in Russia, he says, they're there for 56 years. He says, and they're enforcing it because the 100 years haven't been reached yet.
It's one way of covering it up, but nevertheless, you, in this age, you can go a little more rapidly and accept something. You see, one, although I can see many faults in Russia, I can see what really has happened. When they broke away, they had little chance of survival because we had English troops, which I think was wrong, in Archangel, in Dardanelles, and in Siberia to stop them. And they just had to keep getting together somehow to get some weapons to try and have some survival. The Russians had to do that. And their one aim in life was to try and survive. And that is the trouble, and that is the material thing that has dominated their attitude to life.
Well, it was not quite so material. They didn't want to achieve wealth. They wanted to achieve a standard of living. They wanted it to be possible that they shouldn't freeze in winter and die of starvation in summer, and that they had homes. And what we today, when we go to Russia and we think, oh, they haven't this and they haven't that, and if they saw what they have in the Western world, their eyes would open very wide. But on the other hand, when you think that it is only 57 years since they had anything at all, then you have a different approach to what their sense of achievement is. And also they have their sense of values is not the sense of values that we who have been spoiled and ruined in the Western world with possession, they have felt if they have a roof over their heads, if they have a certain amount of health services and enough food, then they have achieved quite a lot.
Well, at the same time, I just read in a newspaper a little while back that the government itself in Russia admits that every year 13 million people are arrested for being drunken and disorderly.
Ah, but this is true. At 9 o'clock in the morning, you can see men walking
drunk
through the streets and terribly drunk. And they have kiosks in the streets where they sell beer.
And that means suffering. That means that they are also suffering.
Sure, because they are drowning their sorrows.
That's right.
So they have bought on the street some drink.
For us,
on the street.
In the streets, they have little kiosks.
What is it, drink?
And they buy big jugs of beer. And one will be a long avenue. So they start drinking their beer at this end. And at the other end of the avenue, there's another kiosk with drink.
Yes.
And even the sailors are sitting there in their uniforms, falling off the seats with drink.
In Russia today.
Yes.
I was very surprised because I didn't see it the previous time I was in Russia. There were, on one morning, on the Sunday morning, we were near the church, but that church was shut. I saw, and my wife did too, three men who were working men on the Sunday morning, because Sundays don't mean anything to the Russians. And they were very drunk. They were singing and they were rolling about and waving their hands around and everything else. Nobody interfered with them. Nobody arrested them, as far as I know.
But they have, sometimes you will see, for the most part, you will see people almost uniformly dressed, badly cut suits, badly dressed. But occasionally you will see people very, very smart in very good clothes and very expensive clothes. And you know that these are not a home product. And then you discover later that there are certain secret shops where the hierarchy go and shop by themselves and they can buy the things. But when I talk to somebody and I said, you're wearing a very expensive dress, a very smart dress, well, this wasn't made in Russia. And she said, and you don't see them in the Russian shops. And she said, oh yes, but you see, we only have a few in the country. And when they go to the shops, everyone rushes for them. But this isn't so. Everything is there. Everything. Most expensive things you can buy in Russia, if you are of that class, of the hierarchy to go.
Now, what we found in Russia is this, that they want to get foreign money. They are trying to get
Yes, money. They want to get dollars.
Dollars,
and English money. They have four types of money they want. They want German money, they want French money, they want English money, and they want American money.
Foreign money.
Foreign money. And they have these places where they sell you goods cheap. And you must then pay them in your own coin. You can't pay them in Russian money. And so that's what we found.
Yes.
We bought a number of things, a few things.
Toys, mostly
toys for children.
Toys for children
and things like that. But they also have a lot of supermarkets, big markets, all over the country, and they are
controlled by government. Controlled by government?
No, I thought they were controlled by government, but whatever control the government has there, the markets are supplied by an Italian and an American firm in joint supply. Something Detroit. I can't think
but
of the American name.
They do have very high appreciation of art, of the arts, very high appreciation.
The galleries, the ballet, the theatre, it's all very, very good. Those are the good things there.
But when you see them tilling their soil and their ground, still with very primitive implements,
yes.
And you realize that they haven't got the things that the Western world have, and this is why Brezhnev must go to America and bury his pride and ask for grain and ask for machinery, because their machinery, they have outer space capsules, but they haven't machinery to till the ground.
See, the point that I'm seeing is that previously there was a hard struggle for physical survival.
Yeah.
And as they managed to satisfy that to some extent, and develop more and more material prosperity, then we see that the people are becoming again depressed, and they're drinking, and so many things.
But they always drank. The Russians always drank.
Yes, but they, but just like you were saying, you notice more than before.
Yes.
More than before. Mm. That means that they're not solving their problem of not being satisfied, of becoming unhappy. They trade one kind of difficulty for another kind of difficulty.
Exactly.
And they don't find a solution to the fact that they're not happy in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're missing the entire point, because they're, as he said, they're it's like the big scientist was saying, there is no life after death. The Russian scientist was saying, there's no life after death, and there's no spirit in the body. They're gross materialists. No matter how they arrange it, they'll never become happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always going, they're always missing the point that they really are spirits.
I think that bit by bit they will come to the spiritual side. They're bound to. Because the spirit has to survive.
They'll come if they're presented with it very nicely. If you don't present spiritual knowledge, nobody will suspect it. As soon as they accept the body as the self and try to work hard until they die, but if they're presented with it nicely, right, just like we can present them with a nice philosophy and a nice way of experiencing the philosophy, right, then this way, as they're exposed to it, right, then they'll be inclined to take it.
But don't you feel that there is a certain spiritual a striving through their music and through their art form? I think they express themselves spiritually in that way quite a lot.
Well, the question becomes a definition of what is spiritual. And from our point of view, the service of God, that is actual spiritual life. The glorification of God, the service of God. And the glorification and service of other goals or ends, these are on different platforms of material consciousness. Until they link you with God, with the Supreme Lord, with Krishna, right? Then you get spiritual experience. But amongst the activities of material experience, which are not done in the service of God, there are of course a tremendous variety. A variety from getting drunk on beer to performing opera to glorify the Russian Revolution. They make a very nice opera for glorifying the Russian Revolution, and it's a subtle form of material enjoyment. Again, it will not fulfill it, but it's more subtle. They may it has more attraction to an intelligent person than drinking liquor, but not spiritual bliss. And this we find it.
I think you're right there, but there is no spiritual feeling at the moment, because you see, they do worship in a sort of way, a political way, Lenin. There are, you haven't been to Russia?
No, I haven't.
You haven't. There are banners 6 or 7 stories high of Lenin.
Right.
You've seen those.
It's like they're beginning to worship Mao in the same way in China, with a huge statue of Mao.
That's right. And
they're worshipping an ordinary man, and they'll never get any spiritual satisfaction. They'll get different kind of mental stimulation, but it will always leave them wanting inside, because the real supreme person, they're not linked with.
So this question I asked Mr. Kotovsky, that where is the difference between your philosophy and my philosophy? You have Lenin for your worship, and we have Krishna for our worship. So where is the difference in the principle?
The Russians have Lenin, I have not.
No, no, I am asking that.
This was a discussion with Mr. Kotovsky.
So he could not reply it.
Well, you see, the Russians have some sort of feeling that Lenin is a sort of savior, a material savior.
So everyone thinks. Everyone thinks of his, just like we Indian.
Yes.
We think of Gandhi, that he is the savior.
Yes.
But at the same Gandhi is disrespected in Pakistan. The Pakistani, they think Jinnah is the savior.
Yes, sir.
So this is natural. Either you accept Lenin or Jinnah or Gandhi or Churchill, this is sentiment. This is sentiment.
But you know, the thing that puzzled me the first time, puzzled me again. The first time when I was in Russia in 56, Lenin had died in 1953. He was
Stalin.
Yes. I beg your pardon. Lenin was much earlier. Stalin had died in 1953. Khrushchev had exposed him a year or two later at this meeting, and later that came out and it was handed to everybody all over the world. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that he had been denounced, in 1956 there was a gigantic statue of Stalin in one of the air terminals in Moscow. They have a numerous series of air terminals around Moscow. I think there are 8 or 9 of them. And each one is different. And that thing was there for a long time. When I came back from China into Moscow, I found that in the National Hotel where I stayed...
Yeah, I stayed also there.
You stayed there?
In that corner.
That's right.
Red Square.
Yes.
And I noticed that there was, when I got into that hotel, that there was a large painting of Stalin downstairs. And then I saw Roosevelt's granddaughter was there, Franklin Roosevelt's granddaughter was there. She had flown in from America, age 19, with the first batch of American people visiting Russia for the first time since the revolution. And I had come from China. And a man stopped me in the lift and said to me, he said, I have come to save these people. And I said, how are you going to save them? In what way? He says, teach them Christianity. I said, you won't succeed. He says, well, I'll tell you how I'll do it. And I said, I've just arrived, I'm very tired, I'm going upstairs, and I'm going to have a bath if I can manage it. And I couldn't have a bath because I turned the hot tap fell, you know, the thing you turn, the tap. And it fell off and cold water came out of it. And I tried the cold tap and hot water came out, and that tap fell off too, so I couldn't have a bath. Anyhow, the next morning I went to the Kremlin. And the Kremlin was open to the public then about the first time, because John Gordon, who writes in the Sunday Express, when I came back he asked me for lunch with him. I knew him well. And he said, you didn't see the Kremlin. I said, I did. He said, well, I was there 2 years ago. He said, they wouldn't show the Kremlin to people. And I said, I went in there, but they showed me around. Nevertheless, When I was there, went to the Kremlin with a party from the hotel, National Hotel where you were. We stayed there this time because I specially asked for it. I liked the hotel. And
it's a big hotel. It is a big hotel.
But yeah. Now there is one that holds 7,000 people, one hotel.
Mm. It's the Russia Hotel in Moscow, to the left of the Basil Cathedral. Mm. So I went there with my camera, and there was a girl whom I didn't know. I later learned she was Roscoe's daughter, granddaughter. She came up to me and she said, snap. And I looked at she had the same camera as she had. I'd bought mine in Japan, and she bought hers somewhere else in America. And we took a few pictures together, and then she drifted away and I drifted away, and then I got to the hotel, there she was, and she came from the inner room, the room where the in-tourist, every hotel has an in-tourist department, as you know. And she came up to me and she said, you're living here? And I said, yes. So she said, may I come and lunch with you? And I said, do, please. I said, my name is so-and-so. She said, my name is Kate Roosevelt. She's the granddaughter of Roosevelt. And she was 19, as I say, and she sat with me and we lunched together. And there, behind my back, the man who was the Canterbury, Dean of Canterbury, a communist, you know who I mean?
Red Dean.
Hmm? Red Dean, that's right.
What is his name now? I do know it, it's two names in one. And she said to me, she said, do you know him? And I said, no. She said, talk to him. And I said, well, we're having lunch now, and I can't get up and tell him why I want to know you. But it happened that night that I went to an opera without Kate.
Hewlett Johnson.
Yes. And I went to the opera, and you're not allowed in. If you haven't reached your seat before the curtain went up, you've got to stand at the back, which is what I had to do. And when I finally, during the interval, went forward and sat there, I had my seat. There were five people there. There was the man who was the guy at the corner on the third row. There was Mrs. Hewlett Johnson.
Yes.
There were the two daughters, and then the dean, the red
yes.
dean. And I sat next to him. That was the seat I had booked. And he turned to me and he said, you've just arrived from England. And I said, no, I've just arrived from China.
Oh.
Yesterday. And he said, it's the greatest country in the world.
The red dean said that.
Yeah, the dean said that. And we talked quite a lot, and we went back, and he said, my two girls like having ice cream. Would you like them to join us for ice cream at the hotel? So we went back, and I had ice cream with the girls. And I asked his wife, I said, you live in Canterbury. I said, you were busy. So she said, well, I have only one thing to do. She said, I'm a magistrate, and I never know when my husband will be brought up to before me in the magistrate court. Anyhow, he was a man who had a sense of fun.
Yes.
He believed in the Christian teaching of the appeal to the public,
yes.
Sermon on the Mount, which to some extent governs the attitude, the religious attitude, I wouldn't say religious, idealistic attitude of the communists.
Yes.
But the communists have enforced a police force and harshness over that so that the thing doesn't operate in the
there's
way
no,
the
there's
Bible
no religious
said.
Feeling in Russia.
Yeah, they clash. Well, the next morning, I went alone to queue up and see the Lenin tomb.
In his tomb, yes.
And I found that Stalin was in the tomb still. They hadn't moved him out. And Hewlett Johnson came up to me when I came out of there. He said, he's still there, Stalin, isn't he? And I said, yes, and he roared with laughter. He said, they're going to throw him out, you know. And here's a man who was a communist because he believed in the Christian Bible. And he allowed for margins which did not operate so far as he should have known, but he didn't know. He was a kindly man who believed in these things, and he believed in kindness and gentleness, and he believed in God.
I see.
So that is the position there. When I was there before, they had the two in there. But when we went again, very, very big crowd of people, they're there for hours, three times a week. And you go in, and the soldiers there, and they will look at you and see where you're holding your hand. You may have a gun in your hand.
No, if you must not have your hands in your pockets. You must have your hands at your sides so that they can see. And one person went past, and it was a very cold day,
yes.
And he had his hands in his pocket, and he took a thing and he banged his hand, took his hand out very quick.
It seems that communism and religious feeling doesn't go together. In Russia, it's completely different.
But there was no religious feeling.
No.
What?
In seeing the tomb of Lenin, there was no religious
feeling. You didn't go, did
you? No, why should I go?
No, I went to see it because my wife hadn't seen it and they changed it a good deal. You see, the body is not shown to the full. The body is shown up to that and the rest of it doesn't exist. I don't know where the legs are. There's no sign of the legs there at all.
But it's not important.
No, but I'm saying that this is part of a waxwork show.
Yes.
And the face has to be touched up and painted and everything all the time. It isn't the face that he had.
Mm.
I think a lot of it is nothing. It's a dummy.
Yeah. It's become a legend almost.
Hmm?
It's become a legend.
But you know, when one talks about religion and people say, I am a Catholic or I am a Jew or I am a Muslim or I am something, these are just labels, provided that one really believes and practices that full religion, whether it's Christian, whether it's anything else, they are fully satisfying their God. It is, after all, there is, after all, one creator alone. And no matter what you feel you are, you go to that God. You may think it is a one God, somebody may think it's another God, but it is one God, because there can only be one God. So why there are these wars over religion is something I can't understand.
The Protestants fighting the Catholics in Ireland now.
Killing. And the most vicious, the most appalling wars are because of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was one universal religion, there can be no more fighting because this one is something and that one is something.
Exactly.
That's our program.
That's your program. Is it as simple as that?
There's one God and we are eternally His servants. And the way that you can find out the science of how to satisfy God, that is the perfection of religion.
But how can you satisfy God? Can you satisfy God by shedding all your worldly possessions? By becoming just one member of a community? Is that serving God?
No.
What is serving God?
You can see, stay here for one or two days, you can see how you are serving God. You can learn. You are welcome, we shall give you a room, you can stay. And from morning to night, you see how you are serving God.
But there isn't one phrase that tells you what it is.
Hmm?
There isn't one phrase which sums up your...
Yes, there is phrase in Bhagavatam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Sayam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Sayam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. Ishara Parama Krishna. Ishara means controller. So controller everyone can become. You are also controller, I am also controller. But Parama Ishara, the supreme controller. We are controller, but we are at the same time controlled by somebody else. But Krishna, he is controller, but he is not controlled. Therefore, the Shastra says, Ishara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. So here is Krishna. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Purittajya Mamitam Sarana. As you know, there are so many faiths. But Krishna says that real religion is to surrender unto me. Therefore you give up all this pseudo religion. Sarva Dharman Purittajya. Giving up. Mam ekam saranam. Just surrender to me. I shall give you protection from all sinful yet. So here is God. And he is accepted by great acharyas. in India there are great acharyas, religious leaders, just like Ramanuja Acharya, Madhya Acharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, latest Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and many others. They accept Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. So there is God, His name, His address, His activities, everything is there. If we accept, then we benefit.
Do you think that the poor Indians who are suffering because of this terrible drought in India, is it in India?
Yes.
Is there relief never going to be in this world? Is it only going to be when they die?
Well, nobody's dying.
Dying is passing, is the spirit passing from the physical body into the metaphysical?
Everyone, everywhere is dying. Do you think in your country nobody dies? Is there any guarantee that nobody will die?
No, but everyone dies because this is the pattern and this is the cycle. You are born, you live your life, you die, some people die young.
India, at the present moment, they have lost their culture. In India, 5,000 years ago, when Maharaj Parikshit was there, one black man was trying to kill a cow. He immediately took his sword, the king. He said, "Who are you? You are killing cow in my kingdom." In same India, the government is sanctioning 10,000 cows to be killed daily. So India is not the same India. India has lost its culture, you see. Therefore they are suffering.
But everything is changing. Not only India is changing, every country is
changing. So every country is suffering. Russia is suffering in one way.
California is
suffering
in
another way.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is free from suffering. I have already explained. There are three kinds of sufferings. So who is free from these sufferings? You may not be suffering from any bodily disease, but you may be suffering from mental agony. You may not be suffering from mental agony, but you may suffer by suffering imposed by other one. There are so many sufferings. This place is suffering. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, dukkhalayam asasatam. This place is for suffering. Dukkhala. Dukkha means suffering. Alayam means place. Asasatam. And still you cannot make adjustment. If you say, all right, let there be little suffering, let me stay here. That also will not be allowed. You will be kicked out. Cut out. Then you have to accept another body. You do not know what kind of body. So these things are there. Don't think the little happy life for 10 years or 20 years is the solution of your problem. There is no solution. Real solution is different. That is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Mam upeta konti yav dukkhalayam asasatam napnuvanti atma saṃsiddhiṃ paramānu. Find out this one. Mam upeta konti yav dukkhalayam asasatam. You are reading Bhagavad Gita, kindly read very carefully. You will get all answers.
I have the book. From the highest planet in the material world, down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again.
This is Sarva. Then that people are going to the higher planetary system, that is already known. Not this process, but there is another process. How we can be elevated? Kabrahma Bhuvanaloka. And even go to the highest planetary system, Brahma Loka, where people live for millions and millions of years. Brahma's one day is 12 hours, you cannot calculate. It's so big number of years. So Krishna says that if you go to the Brahma Loka, still you have to suffer. Simply your suffering will stop. Maam upetta dukkam pya dukkhalam. What is that?
Maam upetta dukkam pya puna janma na vidyate.
Then maam upetta dukkam pya dukkhalam asasam. What is that?
Maam upetta puna janma dukkhalam asasvatam napnuvanti mahatmanah sangsiddhim paramangataha. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection.
This is the highest perfection. You have to go to Krishna.
So when you have had your suffering in various forms and through various lives, you then reach that.
Not that. You have to prepare yourself to go there. Not that because you have suffered so much, automatically you will go there. No, not like that. Unless you endeavor for going to Krishna, there is no possibility. That is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasyaiva heta prajateta kovida nalabhate jad bhamatam uparjada. Human life is meant for trying for that thing which he has not achieved by wandering up and down. So a living entity is wandering up and down, sometimes in the higher planetary system, the lower planetary system, sometimes rich, sometimes poor, sometimes this, sometimes cat, sometimes dog, sometimes demigod. In this way he is suffering. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Eirupe brahmanda bhramite kono bhagwan. You understand Bengali? In
you
this
do,
way...
Yes, you do.
In this way, a living entity is wandering. But by fortune, if he gets in touch, Guru Krishna, a bona fide representative of Krishna, Guru, by the mercy of Krishna, because Krishna is everyone's heart, then he gets the seed of devotional service. And if he cultivates the devotional service, then he goes back. This is the problem. Not that because one has suffered so much, therefore automatically. No, not like that.
Swamiji, my wife is tired, I think. She's had a long day today. Would I have your permission to take her home?
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much. Right. It's been a great joy for me and for my wife. To be with you.
Give them this flower. One. Yes.
Oh.
No, no. One. Yeah. Give them. Your full name.
Ruby James Benin. You have my name, full name.
Yeah.
How did you find his name?
I was recommended, in fact.
By who?
Well, the person asked me not to say.
Oh, I see.
Who?
The person asked not to say.
Thank you.
You can take these also.
These also?
For me?
Yes.
Okay.
As if you want... Yes, oh.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. We will read this with great joy at home. Thank you, Swamiji.
All right. Thank you for your kind.
Thank you.
तुम्हारा घर तबीयत